Hello and a very warm welcome to today's webinar. Today we have an Under the Spotlight with Mitch Oliver and Katie Laviolette, who you may otherwise know as winners of our prestigious Brave Leader of the Year Award and Ones to Watch Award back in 2019. So I hope you're all doing well. We love coming to you every Wednesday and all the other webinars, and we're hearing lots of good feedback that you're enjoying them too. So we're going to keep them going as long as possible and maybe even beyond as well, because what we found is doing this has really connected our global community in ways we've never seen before. And as you know, our focus in this new normal is all about really number one, our well-being of us and all of our teams, keeping us inspired and motivated and staying connected in our global community that is ever growing, which is really exciting. So today I'm really happy to bring this event to you. Just like last week, the lovely conversation with Sarah Bennison, very similar, no holds barred, informal, relaxed, chilled conversation, where you get to hear from two exceptional leaders who have had some real interesting successes in their career and bring very different perspectives from different stages of their lives, wisdom, experience. Notice there, Mitch, I didn't say age. So just before I introduce our two speakers, I just thought I'd, as always, see how everyone's feeling and also want to see where people are dialing in from all around the world. So what's the one word you're feeling right now that explains yourself? If you can just use the chat function to, and then it also allows us to test the chat function as well to tell us where you're coming from and in terms of around the world and also how you're feeling right now. We're using the chat function for some interactivity, but any specific questions, would you use the Q&A, and please keep them as pithy as possible, because as always we want to keep this really interactive, but our way to answer many questions as possible is if we keep them nice and succinct. Loving this. So we've got restless in Scotland, I relate very much so. It's been a few weeks now, hasn't it? Interested, positive, high in Dubai, feeling good. That's what we like to see. Lovely. Anyone else want to join in? There's lots of you on the call. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll keep hearing from you throughout. So use the chat, use the questions, and let's introduce our two speakers and find out how they're feeling as well. So our speakers need little introduction, given they won such brilliant awards last year. My screen just froze, which is perfect, isn't it? And that just shows this interesting virtual times that we're living in. I relate to you in that Glasgow, tired, caged in London from Dan. Can understand that one as well. So first of all, I first met Katie when she attended our Ones to Watch program back in 2017. She stood out then and she certainly stands out now. She joined AkzoNobel from PepsiCo Canada over 5 years ago and began there as brand manager. And today in her current role, she's leading the customer marketing team. And if that wasn't enough, she's currently completing her MBA at York University. Rather smart lady, I think it's fair to say. Our next speaker, you've seen her in our program before. I'm delighted to bring her back, Mitch Oliver. I think it's fair to say over 20 years or so, she's had a very impressive career. And there she is. Hello. Hi, Mitch. And Katie, come and join us as well with the wonders of technology. She joined Mars back in 1995. Not showing your age at all there, Mitch. and has had an incredible career, and right now has, I think it's fair to say, her perfect role. I've known Mitch for years, had the pleasure of speaking with her all around the world, most notably in New York for the UN, which was a real career highlight for me, and I think it was for her as well. And what she very much talks about is being braver and being yourself, which is two things that, as you all know, very passionate about too. She's currently Global Corporate Brand and Purpose Director at Mars. That's quite a long title, Mitch. And it's a role, I think it's fair to say, that you pretty much created yourself. Is that,
is that fair to say? Yeah, made it up entirely.
brilliant. So without further ado, a huge welcome to you two ladies. It's absolutely wonderful to have you here. So let's start with your word. Are you feeling any of these words that we've got on the chat? Energized, caged, how are you feeling?
Can definitely relate to some of them. I think excited with an underlayer of nervousness, but I'll stick with excited as the lead.
Brilliant. Nerves are always good. Mitch?
Yeah, I'm feeling quite calm. I managed to take the dog for a walk this morning. I've hurt my knee, so I can't run. So I've been trying to do yoga. And so that's been a good way to kick off a calm feeling to the day.
Wonderful. That's what we love. Brilliant. So I'll start with you, Mitch. How are you finding things? I think it's fair to say we've had a bit of a, you know, been turned upside down in many ways. So how are you finding things? And if you particularly focus on what kind of opportunities and things you're finding rewarding, but also what's been quite challenging?
Well, it's just been a, I mean, the more you think about it, the more slightly surreal the whole thing gets. So sometimes I'm finding myself just choosing not to think about it too much. And in fact, I find that I'm usually a bit of a news junkie. I love listening to the news and reading the papers, but actually I'm once a week, I kind of check in and do a check, which I think is working for me. So I guess that personally, I have a 12-year-old at home. He's just before the age where he really doesn't want to spend time with his mum and dad. So, and old enough not to need constant attention, as you'll know, Gemma. So in a way, there's some elements of this that is really lovely, because as a family, we're getting to spend time together. We have lunch together every day, and breakfast and dinner. And then from a work point of view, I guess on the positive side, what I've redirected our team to do is really to take the marketing and communication skills and to use them for the 125,000 people that work for Mars globally, to try and help our, we call them associates, to try and help our associates cope with the crisis through clarity of communication, through recognizing their needs, and through very simple messaging, something that organizations don't have to do very often. So it's a complete shift, but it's really rewarding and really exciting. And I guess the thing I'm finding hard, it's really hard being a good line manager virtually. You know, everyone's experiencing this differently. I'm checking in a lot with people, but it's not the same as sitting opposite someone in a room and or going for a walk or whatever and really trying to connect into their, you know, their vibe. So I'm finding line management tough at the moment.
Thank you. Love the honesty. What about you, Katie? You're nodding a lot there. You resonate with some of those things?
Yeah, definitely, especially when talking about the work bits. I think professionally, the parts that I'm finding a bit more challenging is the amount of Skype time, first of all. I don't think I've ever spent so much time in front of a screen, where you think it feels quite normal. It's not like we just got introduced to the world of digital and technology. But I guess when you're in the office, there's just so much face-to-face interaction that you get. And also just being able to read body language and pick up a bit more informally. So I'm definitely missing that side of it. But from a positive point of view at work, it's just been lovely to hear kind of people's work-life balances they've been able to get. And we've also, I think, almost gotten closer as a team in ways as well. Like, we're checking in more informally, more than we would have at the office from my point of view. We're having more kind of check-in calls, just general, even virtual drinks, whereas we're based in Slough, it's kind of hard to just go to a pub after work in Slough. Most people are commuting, etc. So it's definitely brought people closer in a sense, which has been lovely to see. And then personally, it kind of mimics it. Again, just not being able to physically see people is difficult, and just having to replan your life a little bit. I was meant to fly home to Canada in 2 days. That's not happening. We're meant to be getting married in August. That's probably not happening. So it's just needing to be flexible. But again, benefits. I'm not spending 2 to 2.5 hours in a car every day, which is quite nice. So being able to spend kind of more time with my partner and puppy and getting out for walks and exercising more. So there's definitely a lot of trade-offs, but kind of negatives and positives on both ends.
Yeah, no, thank you. All the people that we've spoken to actually always cite that it's those moments where you get to spend time with your family that are the most rewarding. And being able to have dinner 3 times a day, well, not dinner 3 times a day, but for meals. Some people might want dinner for breakfast, you never know. 3 times a day is one of those things that, you know, as business, we just don't usually get that, do we, in our crazy, crazy world. I've had to learn to cook. So I have to say that's been, well, I could always cook, but I've had to learn to cook better, which has been an interesting time. So the reason you're both here is because you won our fantastic award, which, as I think everyone knows, that is part of it. And we just announced our shortlist for Brave Leader this year. It's no mean feat to get that accolade. So I'm going to start with you, Mitch. Well, what's it meant to you to win the award?
Oh, Gem, you think you know it? It's been, I don't know, it was amazing. It was amazing. It was the highlight I've had lots of highlights of my career, but I have to say, I do love a gold star. I've always loved a gold star ever since I was a child. And if I try and pretend I've grown out of it, but I haven't really. It was like getting a giant gold star, and it came. Some of you who were there maybe may know it came at such a critical time for me. I was diagnosed with breast cancer last year, and I think I had just finished my radiotherapy treatment. I was very lucky; I caught it early. Go to the doctor, everyone. If you have anything you're worried about, get it checked. So I had operation and I had radiotherapy. I think we've got people from Cancer Research on the call apparently. So extra love for those people. And I guess what happens when you go through these things is you lose your identity a bit. You become a patient first. You become a sort of a thing that has to be poked and prodded and inspected. And then, of course, the next and most important thing is obviously your family. So you're a mum and a partner and all the rest of it. So that that professional identity, which is so important to me, it's such a big part of who I am. I spend so much of my time and my, you know, we have a finite amount of energy that we can give. And I give a lot of that to my work. Even though I kept working throughout my treatment, it was almost incidental. So it was at that moment in time to win an award, and not just any award, but the Marketing Society Brave Leader Award, the bravery bit, and it was just super special and much, much needed. And it gave me an enormous boost. And it gives you, I'll shut up in a minute. It gives you confidence because it's hard to be brave. And you make lots of small decisions and big ones that people know about, but small decisions daily where you're trying to do the right thing or you're trying to do the brave thing. And most of the time you don't have someone going, oh, well done, or that's great. So to have a moment when people go, you know, we've taken a step back and we just recognize it, is very special. So it was incredibly special and important to me.
Lovely. Lovely. And I remember when you accepted the award, which was a great moment, and I've got lots of pictures capturing the moment, in fact. You said, why be boring? Be brave.
When you can be brave, yeah. I think it's my LinkedIn profile picture still is on from that night, actually.
Oh, brilliant. Good. Excellent. And what about you, Katie? Different stage of your career. So what's it meant for you, and how's it maybe even helped you so far since you've won?
Yeah, well, I think always trying to kind of put myself in uncomfortable situations and do things that make me feel a little bit uneasy is something I've always kind of tried to do professionally and personally. So being recognized and rewarded for that was just such a proud moment that I had at that time. And even just going through the process, to be honest, without even winning, it felt amazing. Obviously, first having Axe and Nobel recognize that and put me forward, but then going through the process, getting to do the presentation in front of an incredible host of judges and getting to kind of answer their questions and have that chance. But then actually winning it on that day, it was like, wow, like it was incredible. And actually after, because the Brave Leader Award was last, save the best for last, if you will. And actually seeing that was just a really good reminder of, I'm this kind of early on in my career and I'm being recognized for it, which is great. But I'm assuming that as you kind of progress with your career, it gets more challenging and more challenging to be brave because you're making even bigger decisions, and the decisions you make have more impact than probably the ones I've had to make so far. So it was just a really good reminder of, well done, but keep focusing on it, because obviously it does get recognized and it has impact. So it's kind of made me think of development a little bit more. And I think it will stay top of mind versus before it became a bit more of a habit versus I think you need to set some brave goals as well, looking ahead.
Lovely, thank you. And you've had an impressive career in your time today, I think it's fair to say, Katie. Tell us what's driven your success so far, do you think? I'm coming to you next, Mitch, on that question.
I'm writing it down.
I'm going to say we can switch if you want now. I think it's a combination of things. A little bit is just natural curiosity and kind of wanting to learn more, discover more, try new things. I've also got a bit of competitiveness in me. So whether that's kind of competing with other brands within the industry, but also quite competitive with myself. So if I've done something once, how can I do it better the next time? So obviously with competitiveness comes pros and cons. So I try to take the pros of it and keep that going. But there's also this part of me that doesn't, like, there's so much time that we spend at work. And I don't want to leave any project or role or my career at that with regrets. And I think that's just a constant reminder that if you're going to spend all this time doing something, and if you're going to do something, do it as well as you can. So I think the fear of regretting how I've done something, although I know I'm never going to get something perfect, but if I know I haven't put my all into it, that's what drives me as well.
Nice. Mitch, what about you?
It's a good question. I was just thinking, one of the things I'm finding difficult at the moment is I really miss seeing my mum and dad.
Yeah, me too.
And to trust me, within 5 to 10 minutes of seeing them, we'd be driving each other round the bend. But I miss that. I even miss that. And I was thinking about the influence. So I guess my dad's ethos is always just work hard. Work hard and you will get rewarded. If you really put effort in, if you hit a barrier, you just go find another way around. And my mum's ethos was always just be nice and kind. And that sounds trivial. I actively don't think it's trivial at all. You know, in fact, treat everyone else in the way that you would want to be treated, whoever they are. And I think the combination of work bloody hard and treat people with kindness has really been, now that I'm old and stuff and I look back at it, I think I didn't realise with hindsight how much I took that into my work and into my career. And I guess that's what's driven me, because I very rarely have been motivated by the actual job title that I'm, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like gold stars, I like getting progressively bigger job titles, I have an ego just as we all have. But the being the brand manager of, you know, brand X versus brand Y has rarely been the motivator. It's more about doing the absolute best that I can in any situation I'm put in, and doing it in a way that brings people with you in a positive, with positivity and honesty, I guess. So, the thing about that is you can transfer that to almost any role, basically, that you do. So big thank you to my mum and dad, I think.
Yes.
Like an Oscar speech.
I love it. But always good to mention mum and dad. And I always say, agree with the work hard, but I always add play hard on the end of that, as you know.
Yes.
Be you and be kind, I think, are the things. But my team will definitely testify to that. So Katie, I'm going to come to you. Back in the start of lockdown, Dulux were one of the 39 brands who teamed up with Channel 4, which is really cool for the ad break to take over the show for the NHS. So tell us about that.
It was just really special to see. So it wasn't something that I personally worked on, but I'm in the retail team, so the retail comms team had led that. So I was aware that it was happening. And once I actually saw it, it was just that really special moment that kind of brought us back to kind of what we would do as a brand. So it wasn't shocking, but the fact that we could bring the most loved Dulux dog into everyone's home for just a brief moment, knowing the joy that brings, but also to be able to encourage and celebrate the NHS in that time, was just quite rewarding as an employee to be part of, and knowing that's the brand that kind of we're helping to build and maintain and connect people with, was really special.
You know, it's awesome. And I think it's so important that seeing the brands that are doing things at the moment, I think they're the ones that are going to really stand out going forward. Mitch, you've truly delivered, and we've talked about this a lot, different groundbreaking marketing campaigns, and one of which you won a Channel 4 award for, didn't you? Particularly around champion diversity. And I have to mention the Maltesers looking on the lighter side campaign. Tell us about, I know everyone always asks you, and it was a while ago and you're in completely different jobs, but tell us about that and the impactful campaign and particularly how you got it through the approval process. I'd be interested to hear.
Yes, I mean, that was just one of those magical moments. So we were working on Maltesers new campaign, and we were working on, I was leading something in the UK team about how to make the content of our advertising more reflective of the wonderful society that buy our products. And the two things came together when the Channel 4 did a competition, and Dan Brooks, who I since got to know, who brilliant guy, did a competition with £1 million worth of media at stake to make some ads for the opening ad break of the Paralympics opening ceremony that featured people living with disability. It's a great example of saying yes. It's easy to say no, it's harder to say yes. The agency, to be fair, AMVBDO, came with some ideas. I looked at them, I thought they were great, but I frankly didn't think we'd win. So it was quite easy to say, yes, let's enter them, because what are the chances that we'll win? I actually, this is probably not the best message to give. I didn't tell a soul. I didn't tell anyone else at work, because I thought there's no point me getting into a whole discussion about whether we should or shouldn't make these ads, because some of them were a little bit on the risque edge, because we won't win and it would have been a pointless conversation. So anyway, and then we got into the finals and I told one person, and this I think is a great, I told my boss, I said, look, Blas, he was the CEO for the UK. I said, I've entered this competition. We've got to the finals. Here are the ads. They're amazing because they celebrate women, this telling stories of women who live with disability, but they're a bit on the edge. A couple of them are a bit on the edge. And he just said, I don't even need to see them, Mitch. I've got your back. And I can't tell you how liberating that was. It was, and I always try and remind myself, because I'd like to see them and I've got your back. But the fact that he just completely trusted me, I think is a great lesson in leadership. And then we won. And then I had a bit of a, then I had a, an easier sell, because what I could do is I went, then I had to do the stakeholder engagement, and I went and I could say, we've won £1 million of free media. That was my opening line. And here are the ads. But do you know what? Passion plays a lot in selling other stakeholders over. And as we've talked about a lot, Gemma, in the space of diversity and inclusion, when you start talking to people, everybody has an element of themselves that they feel is different and not understood. And if you can connect with that element, and through this advertising, we could say we're telling the stories of people that aren't told. That's what we want to do. If you can connect with your stakeholder in that way, then it can make a real difference. Anyway, it was a transformational journey for me, and it was an amazing experience. And there are some new Maltesers ads out right now during COVID in partnership with, which I'm super, I haven't been involved in, but I'm super proud of the legacy. We've done a partnership with Mind, showing women just talking about life in lockdown. So it's cool.
And when are they out now?
They're out now, yes. Don't ask me where. They're somewhere in the media space in the UK.
Amazing. I think there'll be a lot of people going on YouTube to find that right now, definitely. Not you, Katie, not mid-interview, I would suggest. Maybe wait till later.
Can I just pause for a second?
Brilliant. So I'm just going to continue. We're talking about diversity then, Mitch, and I'll come to you, Katie. You've clearly, not just through Maltesers, but many of your brands, really celebrated diversity. So how do you think you can ensure that, you know, you, as an industry, we continue to push diversity and particularly within our teams and beyond?
And it's really important at the moment, because what we're seeing at the moment is backward steps in terms of stereotyping on content. So I'm really passionate about this. So people will know that women are disproportionately impacted by the virus, as they're expected to pick up, typically, not in every household, not in my household, they're expected to pick up more of the home childcare as well as doing their job. And what we're seeing in content is women again being put in that, you know, cook, cleaner, childcare role. Whereas just looking at my screen at the moment, we're in many different roles, including working people. So I'm really passionate about it. And what we've done that's been transformational at Mars, so the agenda went from a UK agenda to a global agenda, and we have an annual audit. We work with an institute called the Gina Davis Institute in the US, where we audit all of our ads globally annually and report back on representation of gender, stereotyping of gender. And we've just expanded it this year for the first time to include, obviously, other intersectionalities, so ethnicity, age, ability and disability, sexuality and things I've probably forgotten. So for me, what I've learned is you need the passion to make the business, to see the benefit of this, and then you need to underpin it with the metrics and the data. And that combination is really powerful.
Lovely, thank you. Love that. Katie, what campaign are you most proud of so far to date?
It's a tricky one to answer because I've got different ones I'm proud of for different reasons. But the one that comes top of mind when I've been at Akzo Nobel is one called Color of the Year. So anyone, if there's anyone listening from Akzo Nobel, they'll know all about it. And it's a program that everyone internally gets extremely excited about. And we're just proud of as an organization, from global through to the local markets. There's so much resource, expertise, external knowledge that gets put into this campaign every year. And I remember when I first joined the company, kind of like, ooh, the Color of the Year campaign, like it's really exciting. And the first time I got asked to lead the campaign, I was like, oh, like they trust me to do this, which is quite a proud moment. So I went through the first year, really, really enjoyed it. But then I got a chance to do it again. And that's probably the one that I felt most proud about, because not only did I go through the motions the first time, obviously delivered, got trusted to do it again, but I had the chance to take the learnings that I had through that first time and learn to kind of adapt to make it even better and bigger, which is always the challenge of this campaign, because given the title, it's Color of the Year. So it does happen kind of year on year. And another exciting part of it is this is probably one of the campaigns I can relate to the most as a consumer as well. It's a really great campaign to encourage people to use color inside the home, make it as easy and accessible as possible, and really show the benefit that color in the home can add to people, which I'm hoping a lot of people are experiencing now, kind of being at home for so long. I did say earlier, not the best background to showcase that. I've got white walls, but in almost every area in my house, I do have color. This is just the best backdrop. So yeah, proud for many reasons, but I think looking back on the results kind of throughout the campaign, when the new elements that you see getting activated are landing and you're seeing the success off the back of it and you feel the team coming together and celebrating it, that feeling of being in the moment but also looking back is quite powerful. So yeah, even talking about it, I can just feel the warmth and kind of go back to the time of doing that campaign.
And what's the current color of the year? I'm curious.
So we actually have a new color of the year that's launching in September, so stay tuned. But the current one is called Tranquil Dawn, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous color if you haven't already seen it.
Brilliant. Lovely. And you mentioned learnings in terms of, you know, repeating that process. What do you think your biggest learning was on that campaign, or biggest learning that you've had to date as a marketeer?
Oh, different questions.
Maybe just focus on the campaign.
The campaign, okay.
Yeah.
So maybe a couple of things. I think the biggest learning was kind of after the campaign the second time, and don't know if I should be kind of saying this, but I am. So I was on the campaign, we launched it, and then about 3 months in, it does last a whole year, about 3 months in, I got brought on to a new role. So I was in the new role, I was really excited, I just wanted to get into that, and that was 100% my focus, where even kind of thinking back to that, I didn't actually take the time, like once the wrap up and the wash up was done, I didn't take the time to actually interrogate the results at the end. It was kind of, I got it to that second month in, results were looking good, I'd moved on and I'd left it, which I think is really easy to do. But when you spent that much time on something and you're that proud, I do wish I kind of dug into the detail of those learnings again, because those learnings wouldn't have just applied to that campaign to do it a third time. It would have applied to a lot of other campaigns going ahead. So that would be one. And I think the second one is the second time around that we did it, customer experience has always been a big thing internally. But especially around that time, there's a really big focus on it. And we actually, the learning was bringing as many people as possible together from across the business and really taking the time to map out as many customer experiences as we could possibly imagine that had to do with this campaign, and kind of mapping out those touch points and getting to the detail of things, which I think is what helped it make it so effective and gave people the confidence to actually pick up the tin and make the change within the house.
I think there's, Gemma, if I can, yeah. There's something, it was one of the things you said, Katie, that really resonated, particularly early on in careers, we can get very impatient and desperate to move to the next role. And there's this obsession with moving roles that with hindsight, I wish I'd realized that you do your best work, I think often on the third time, actually. The first time to learn, the second time to really kind of work out, get your feet under the table, you know what you're doing. And the third time is when you've kind of got permission to be brave, if you like. But also, I wish we could talk more about experiences and less about roles. So I wish we could talk more about what are the experiences that I need to get. Can I get this in my role, or do I need to move to a different role to get it? Because I think this sort of cycle of slight insecurity that you have, because every time you start a new role, you're in improve mode, you're trying to work out, you know, so you kind of, and just as you're getting to the moment when you go, yes, I've got it, you're like, boom, off to the next one. And there's a balance, obviously, there's a balance. But I do think in it, finding a few places in your career where you maybe stay for a bit longer, so that you can really take it up to the next level, can be very powerful. It just triggered what you were saying about doing the campaign once and then being able to do it a second time triggered that thought.
Is that why you've stayed at Mars for?
That's why I've been there for 427 years.
And me too, with the society.
It's actually because the thought of a leaving party just scares the hell out of me. So I'm just staying because I never want anyone to have to do a leaving party and no one turn up and everyone be sad at the pub.
Oh, for goodness sake. Humble as always. Well, I have to say, as you know, as you all know, and as many of you know, that I'm obviously on the exit from the society, outgoing, and I've actually been saying to everyone that wants to hear me, I want a leaving party, even if it's later.
And you're invited.
Absolutely. We need to mark the occasion for sure. Lovely. I'm just going to move on to our industry and some specific campaigns. So Mitch, why do you think, you touched on it earlier, but just want to dig a bit deeper. Why do you think being braver, given the awards about brave leadership and obviously the society is very much at our heart, and why do you think being brave is so critical for our industry? And what do you think we need to be braver about? And get questions ready, guys, because usually I've got loads by this point, but there isn't any. I think people are stunned into silence with the beautiful conversation.
Ask us some questions.
Go
we're
for
in
it.
We're in the creativity. So we're in this, why do I love marketing? The reason I love marketing is for three reasons. I think the first two are data and creativity. I mean, my education before I went into marketing was actually scientific based, but I always had a bit of a creative streak, and I love that combination of data and creativity. And then the third reason that I love marketing is because we've talked about, Gemma, impact at scale, that you're communicating with the whole country, especially if you're on brands, you know, high penetration brands and not sort of specialist luxury brands. You're communicating with everybody, which is an enormously powerful and responsible position to be in. And so you've got to be brave, because you've got to cut through, and you're not going to cut through by being boring. You're not going to cut through by making the same ad that everybody else has made for the last 5 years, but oh, we've got a different colored car in it or whatever it is. So I think bravery comes one from how you use both the data actually and the creativity together, because if we're not brave with our ideas, this industry needs bravery to keep it exciting and alive, like any creative industry does. I mean, if everyone painted the same, I know nothing about art, if everyone painted the same portraits as they had, you know, I've really gone down a tangent here, you know, 200 years ago that I know nothing about, when we were going every time we went to the bloody museum, we saw the same style, we'd be so bored. You've got to keep it fresh and keep it interesting. And secondly, because I, as you know, I think we have a business and a moral responsibility to be brave, to fight for the right to do marketing in a way that is not just responsible, but that holds society to account. So, you know, what does, we're talking about diverse and inclusive marketing look like? What does sustainable marketing look like? How do we lead the industry on what is sustainable marketing? How do we not just go, we need to show people, you know, not throwing plastic in the bin, but how do we change the industry through our bravery? Because we're the voice of our businesses, we're the voice that people hear. They don't hear what goes on, so our opportunity to create change is enormous. So I think there are many dimensions through which we need to be brave. And I think as a whole industry, we can just up our game and less try and listen. I sometimes get frustrated that we kind of listen to the consumer, which is clearly a big part of the job, as to what they want. But what about challenging our consumer? What about leading our consumer? What about being choice architects who help consumers make the right decision or the more responsible decision? So anyway, as you can see, passionate about bravery in marketing.
I love that. And actually, I wrote an article today, and my last word was about having an impact. And as you always say, an impact at scale. Absolutely. And that just reminds me, Katie, of a question that I don't know if you remember that I asked you when we were judging for the ones to watch. And I asked you, you know, using the skills, the techniques, everything that you've learned so far, how do you think you could have a bigger impact? And I'll never forget that you wrote to me that day saying that made you think, and you were going to think about how you build that into your role. So I'm interested to know if you have.
If I've built in how to be more brave.
How to have a bigger impact. So, you know, using your marketing skills, as Mitch says, you know, we're the voice of the customer. We've got so much influence, so much opportunity, not just an opportunity, a responsibility. So have you started on that journey?
Definitely started, but definitely a long way to go, yeah. I'd say as well. So this is my first year that I've been part of kind of our broader strategy team as well, which has been really interesting because I feel like those are the forums where I can have a bit more of a voice and kind of support different initiatives. And that's where I think, to Mitch's point as well, when you want to push things along kind of sustainability agendas and kind of brands for good and whatnot, they're not necessarily things I've started, but you know that you can really help push the organization to and really get behind and support. But I remember when I responded as well, it was almost like as an individual, actually, what can I be doing more of? And this is still, I think, a bit of a kind of external networking thing that I want to get closer to as well. There's been some things I've been able to be a part of, such as Axe Nobel partner with that were bound as an example. So I've worked with different schools and kind of gone in to talk about what marketing means and what it can mean for their future, how they could get into it, but also have gone away for kind of week camping trips with them to teach them kind of how to be brave and how to put themselves forward and things along those lines as well. So I think impact can be made at a very personal level, but obviously at a brand and more company-wide level as well, which is really important because sometimes you could be in a role and feel like, well, I want to make a huge impact and I do want to make a difference, but it's like, where can I do that within the realms of current responsibility? And obviously sometimes the bravery is about asking for more opportunities or sharing ideas with different people around the business. But some are completely in your control and things you can do on a daily basis, which is comforting to know as well.
Love that. Thank you very much. Right, the questions are coming in, so get ready. So we've got one from Nick Elliott, who is a law member and avid follower of our webinars, which I'm delighted to see. He said, we heard from Sarah Bennison last week how her agency partners have been rising to the challenge during lockdown. What's your experience been so far? Mitch, I'll start with you, and obviously I know your role's evolved, but
well, yes, but still working with agencies, it's been great. Actually, I think that's a good example to something Katie said at the very beginning of, so we have a check-in every morning now, and there's about 20 of us on the call. So I think the kind of, we are one team, the agency are one team, and what I've really seen is them really stepping up. Spontaneous things that are quite brave, actually, coming to us spontaneously with ideas, big groundbreaking ideas within the context that we can do, and then some small ones like just was it last week, the agency, our graphic design agency, came up with some ideas about how we should, just for internal use, have, you know, screens, you know, on Microsoft Teams and Zoom, you can put up screens, and how can we be more fun with those and use our brands with them. And it's one of those very small ideas that's just taken on a life of its own, and brilliant. Around the world, people have adopted it. So I think it's like, I mean, I struggle a bit with the line between agency and non-agency. For me, it's just the team. And I think what's brilliant about this situation, this situation is shit, right? Okay, shit for lots of reasons and lots of
well said.
and it is a big struggle, So don't get me wrong, and I'm certainly very aware, and I just was thinking after what I said at the very beginning that I'm saying this from a position of immense privilege, where I'm sitting in a house where we all of us have our computer that we can work on. I've got a small garden we can go outside in. You know, my partner is studies, so he's got more flexibility to help at home, etc. So I'm very conscious of that. However, having said all of that, there are some things that are quite what's the word I'm looking for? Equalising, that's not the right word. So for example, the agency team is just now merged in with the team and none of us know what we're doing. None of us have been in this situation before. It doesn't matter. You're not like employing the agency, the COVID specialist agency, because they don't know what they're doing. I don't know what I'm doing. My boss doesn't know what he's doing. So in some way, levelling, that's the word I was looking for. There's something very levelling about it, which means that you can get brilliance from anywhere, and it's almost more permissible to get that brilliance from anywhere. The hierarchy has broken down a bit in a way that I think is quite empowering and quite healthy. So, sorry, long-winded answer to say, I like the fact that almost the divide between agency and client is sort of diminished through this experience.
Yeah, all about collaboration and working together. And I love your long-winded answers. I think they're brilliant. Yes. what about you, Katie? Have you found this? I love what Mitch just said about team. You know, it's not about, you know, different companies. It's about team together. Have you found that?
Yeah, I kind of echo some of that, because when it comes to this situation, it's not like your formal briefing process where I now have a COVID-19 brief and this is what I need you to deliver. Like, we're not operating in that way necessarily. And I look after retail. So the agency I work closest with is our kind of shopper marketing agency. And it felt more just like conversations. I'll sometimes get a call from the agency and just be like, I was just thinking of this idea that I think could be really interesting. Like, what do you think about that? And actually that, to your point, it does feel like more of a team versus I've asked you a question at 1:30. Can you give me your formal answer? It's a lot more collaborative. And sometimes I'm like, that's brilliant. I think you should call out someone else who's not even in my team and talk them through it, see what they think, because actually that's in their remit and I'd love to be a part of that or support it. Even thinking ahead to planning. Again, we can't actually create a formal brief because we're not 100% sure on what we're asking for necessarily, but it's keeping that two-way dialogue going to bounce information and ideas and hypothesis against each other, that we can start to think of different scenarios as to what we may do. So yeah, it's definitely felt more collaborative and we're in this together, like we're going to work through this together and we're going to make a few kind of hypotheses based on the information we do have, and we'll have to try a couple of things out, but it has been very nice.
Brilliant. No, I couldn't agree more. Right, I've got more questions coming in and I'm really aware of time. This has gone unbelievably quickly. I want the answer to this question, so I'm coming to you, Mitch. This is from Claire. With us all having to change how we communicate with our audiences, how do we drive scale in virtual channels to help drive income without spending your way there? That is an excellent question, and I think one that many of us would like to know right now, particularly us at the Society. Mitch, any idea?
The only thing I can think of to say is, The one equation that I think is fairly unambiguous and has repeatedly been proven is that the effectiveness of communications is 2/3 the creative content and 1/3 how effective your media channels and media buying are. So I guess my answer to that would be brave creative. You know, if you're not going to spend more money and you need to try and cut through, brave creative, and I think that will come from exceptional insight about what people actually need. There is a bit of a tendency at the moment for brands and for some brands and some companies to say what they want to say, which is the antithesis of marketing. What marketing is understanding what people need to hear. And how do you best communicate that to them? So brave creative based on insight. I mean, it's the same answer for anything really, so that might not, but I'm afraid I haven't got a better answer.
No, I love it. And Katie, anything you would add to that?
I don't think so. I was nodding along for that. I was like, I'm in with that.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. So I'm just going to move on. I've got one question in here, and again, it's for you, Mitch, before I move on to a couple of other questions to wrap up already, which is unbelievable. From Jennifer, she loved your personal story. She used to manage Maltesers in Mars Island a long time ago. You might know each other, given Mitch has been there a while. Where do you think the industry is in addressing unconscious bias, and who else does it really well in your opinion? I just thought it was a really great question, so I wanted to ask it. She's at McDonald's.
McDonald's are doing a good job. Hi, Jennifer. I think we're moving forward, which is good, but we're not, I still don't think we're moving forward anywhere near fast enough. I read a book recently, I didn't read it actually, it's an audio book. I listened to a book recently, which I can't recommend highly enough, which was called Why I've Stopped Talking to White People About Race, I think that's what it's called. And it just blew my mind about how far we have to go on representation from an ethnicity. Obviously, as a white woman, I don't have the same instinctive understanding that I might do on gender in that space. We're trying to overcome centuries of bias. So it's going to take, hopefully not centuries, but definitely years for us to accelerate it. And it will. And the people on this call are the people who can make the change. So the industry is us. That's the one thing I think. The industry is you. Jennifer, it's you. It's everyone who's on this call. It's every time you see a script. And you change this. We will change this in a number of ways. Yes, of course, there's, oh, God, it's the man driving the car again and the woman's in the passenger seat. There's the small things when you see a script that you can just challenge and say, what if we mixed it up? What if the woman's kicking the football? What if the woman's driving the car? What if the taxi driver isn't Asian, but the businessman is Asian? What if, etc. There's the people in your team. So any of you who are accountable for bringing talent in, how do you make sure you bring diverse talent in? And then there's the people behind the camera. A woman who works for the British Film Institute once said to me that there's a famous quote that watching a film is like seeing the world through someone else's eyes for an hour and a half. And of course, if the only eyes that you see that world through are a white man's, let's say, then you're not getting a full view of the world. So sometimes you want to see it through a white man, sometimes you want to see it through a white woman, sometimes you want to see it through a young child or an elderly lady or whatever it might be. And I think, so therefore, the directors, the producers, the people on site that we use, this all matters. And if you want, I know if you're talking about bravery, I still, and I'm like bang on about this stuff constantly, I still find I have to sit in meetings and I feel, I feel like a stuck record when I'm going, why are all the directors that you're putting forward for this men? Or why haven't we looked at casting this in a different way? What about casting someone with a disability? What about, I'm constantly having to ask the question. It feels brave to do that. It's not the big stuff, but it's the small stuff. So the industry is moving forward. I'm slightly worried that this crisis will put slow progress down. And I think one of the things we all need to do, and marketeers are great at this, is hold the short term in mind, but not at the expense of the long term. So one of our big challenges in our profession is to be the people who are also thinking about further out, whilst everybody in the operational business roles are going to be very focused on the next week, the next month, the next 3 months, because that's our job in any meeting. The marketeers should be the ones that are thinking further out and further into the future.
Couldn't agree more. And actually, we've got a very apt question from our wonderful chair, Craig Ingalls. And I can't ignore it because he's my boss still. So definitely don't want to upset him. What positive legacy do you think will be left after this crisis? It feels like it follows on really nicely. I'm going to come to you now, Katie.
Positive legacy. Is this personally or just generally, like us looking back as...
However you want to answer it, I think it's just generally the legacy from a personal or a professional point of view.
I think there's something to be said just around everybody's ability to be adaptable and to kind of find a silver lining in a situation where there is so much uncertainty and so much negativity going on. And I think we're seeing this if you kind of start on a personal level on the teams that we work on, again, seeing how everyone's coming together and supporting each other and really has well-being top of mind. But then you're seeing some of the amazing stuff brands are doing off the back of this as well in terms of how they're contributing to the crisis. I mean, there's so many examples that come to mind. I think Nike's always an obvious one to pull out, but I absolutely love their, obviously their positioning is I want to reinforce the message, but I'm going to get this wrong. So if there's anyone from Nike or an agency on the call, forgive me, but I think it was something around, if you've ever wanted to play for millions around the world, now is your chance. Like, they endorse for millions around the world and obviously use their resources to really get that message out. But then you've got like really small brands as well. There's a small restaurant in London I'm obsessed with, Sushi Dog, more of a takeaway. But even them, someone like they're really new. They've only been around for maybe a couple of years. They only have two or three locations. And I follow them on Instagram because I'm obsessed with them. But this whole time they've been out donating kind of Sushi Dogs to the NHS workers. And all I'm thinking is you've got to be like, they must be quite worried about the success of their own business. And you just see so many positive acts of kindness that are worth celebrating. So I hope that's the legacy of all of this. People have been adaptive. There's a lot of good within negative situations. I'll summarize it there.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I love recommendations. Sushi Dog. We're going to note that down. If that's them. When you say Sushi
Dog,
like sushi rolls, I need to know now.
It's like a big sushi roll that you'd eat like a hot dog. It's amazing. And I think they're only like young 20 somethings who started the company. I have no idea of backgrounds or anything along those lines, but it's a really fun little concept and a great product.
I love that. I think they'll get a few more customers from this. Yeah, no, I'm sure. And we talked about this last week, actually, and you guys have very much reinforced it. It's the moments of coming together as a community. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I know my neighbours much better than I knew them ever before. Yes. I knew like four houses and then like the whole road, and we keep on having distancing social parties, which is so nice. And everyone's really helping each other. And I've never seen anything quite like it before, which is really good. Right. I'm really, really aware of time. So look into the future. What do you think the marketing department will look like in 5 years' time? And what an interesting question to have right now as well, given we're in these COVID times. I'm going to come to you, Mitch.
So I think the transition that marketing has been on, well, that the world is on, let's go big, the world is on, is one where expertise isn't hierarchical. So what I mean by that is that the owner of the most appropriate and the best knowledge is not the most senior person in the organisation. And I think that in marketing, that's never more true, because we want, you know, the world is out there, it's changing. We've got, you know, the younger generations, millennials, whatever, famous millennials, you know, are coming into our organizations as marketeers, but they're not getting their voice heard because they are not yet at the top of the organization. So I hope, I have my favorite analogy of leadership is the gardener analogy of leadership, where what a leader does is they think about the seeds that they have to plant. They plant them in different areas. At the beginning, they tend to them quite carefully. They hopefully choose the right areas to plant them. Sometimes they don't, and then they may need to intervene and move them to another area. But then they basically sit down with a cup of tea and watch them flourish and grow. And you can see why I like the analogy. I think that's how it's almost like turning the whole organization upside down. And I think the pace of change is only going to increase. What we're seeing with this crisis is the things that we knew were going to change are just changing more quickly than we anticipated. And therefore, I think the need for leaders to be listeners, to be gardeners, to be cultivators, to create space for the expertise in their organisation to shine is only going to be greater, whether that's in data or in insight or in technology or in creativity. So I hope that's the way it's going.
Love that. Katie, anything you'd like to add to that before I finish on a final question?
Oh, well, it's hard to follow Mitch on just about anything. But
I know, I've been on stage with her a few times.
The only thing I can think ahead to is I'm imagining, and this isn't based off of much insight, but I'd imagine it would just be also a lot more integrated. So I think now there's still pockets within marketing teams where you're an expert in a certain area. Like this is my expertise, that's my expertise, where you have to have wear a lot more hats. And I think we're already seeing that now, but as we look ahead, there's only more technologies developing. There's only more ways to be talking to people. There's a lot going on that I think there's gonna be a minimum amount of expertise you need to have across the whole board, and probably heightened even more so as we continue to look at digital, AI, VR, et cetera. So I do think and I'll probably a lot more flexibility within the teams as well, because things are gonna be moving so quickly. You need to somehow set up a culture and an organization that can change and adapt quickly without having huge impacts and ripple effects. Just a guess.
Yeah, no, I love that. Okay, we are really seriously running out of time, and I know we've got a bit of a hard stop. So just going to finish with one final question, which is, if you can leave our audience with one final piece of advice, in the style of a tweet, ideally, what would it be? I'm coming to you first, Mitch.
Don't be boring, be brave.
Love it. Katie, I thought you'd have longer to respond, but to think about the response, but yeah, go for it.
Don't know if it'll be as concise, but I think it's just keep putting yourself in kind of uncomfortable situations and leave with no regrets. The reward is much greater than the fear.
I love that. And that very much resonates with our Brave agenda. So thank you both so much. I hope everyone has enjoyed that conversation as much as I have. It was really fascinating, really insightful, inspirational. And as always, talking to you ladies, real humility shone through and honesty. So thank you very much. We will be capturing the amazing amount of insights in an article, as well as this is a video piece and an audio piece as well, for all of our members, as all of our webinars are.